it seems like there's just so many different things happening every day that even if you find out about something in the afternoon, it might even be yesterday's news. So how do you stay up to date? I like to use Flipboard. Flipboard curates the world's stories so you can be smarter in your work, life, and play. Choose from thousands of topics to personalize Flipboard and get the latest stories from the best publishers and experts delivered to you 24/7. The best part is you don't have to keep this to yourself. When you see a story that you want to save or share, all you have to do is tap the plus button. That'll add it to either a private or a public collection. Get started now at Flipboard.com. What is up, Midnight Tokers, Afternoon Inhalers, and AM Hookah Smokers? This is the return of the all... Wait, no, he didn't just say what I think he did he? Yes, the AM Hookah Podcast, every Monday, 6:30 p.m. Standard Time, talking about the world of hookah here on YouTube and Twitch. I am the M in the AM Hookah. With me, as always, is the man who tells it like it is, no matter what. Adrian, how are you doing? How have you been, my good sir?
Yo, first of all, fuck me, Zach's here. second of all, no, I've been good, man. Really anxious for the return of the podcast. It's been two dry weeks, and I didn't like that very much. So we're back. We're going to talk about some stuff, and there's someone here you're supposed to be talking to that matters a little bit more right now. What's up, Zach?
Yes, we are joined this week.
I'm happy to be back. I'm excited.
Yes, we're so excited to have you, too. This week, we're joined by our friend of the show and the hookah community, the man, the myth, Zach from YouTube, an amazing channel called Strictly Shisha. How are you doing, and how is your new year for Strictly Shisha?
I'm super pumped, actually. I've already got some videos lined up for the next few weeks, which I've never really done before. I've never had the motivation to do that. Got them pre-filmed and ready to go out soon. So this year's going to be good for me. Putting out a lot of content. I'm really excited. I'm pumped up again. Remotivated.
Awesome.
Stellar.
I've enjoyed the stuff that I've seen recently you post on YouTube. I like the unboxings that you do because they're nice, quick, and simple. They show off some sort of product that I can get excited about seeing maybe a future video in the future and stuff like that. So I thought that stuff was good. And we're going to talk more about it, but I thought your Lotus 2 review was absolutely stellar. So we're going to be talking about that
a ton. I worked hard on that. I'm glad you like that.
I think it hit so many of the keynotes, but we will definitely get into it. But I also want to say hello to everybody, all the wonderful people in chat. I mean, I could start naming off names, and I know that I'm going to miss some people, so I apologize. But Naphael's here. Hookafine is here. Derek Moses, how's it going? My beautiful wife Bridget is here. Wayne Gonzalez, how are you doing? Eddie, Jeremy. I mean, there's just so many people. We can't tell you enough how thankful we are to have you come for the podcast, our season 3 opener. It's just so fantastic. It really is. Adrian, how was your New Year's? Did you do anything exciting? Did you bring the New Year in any fancy way?
I turned 26 on January 1st.
Your birthday.
So it was actually just miserable.
Happy belated birthday.
Thanks, man. I'm on the wrong side now, though. Like, now it's just, I'm getting closer to 30.
It's all good.
I already have existential dread. No, it was really good. I enjoyed the break. I took some time off work, too. It was very enjoyable. Got to smoke a lot. Mondays were weird.
Yes. Yeah, these last two Mondays without the podcast for something, I mean, I just feel like I've been twiddling my thumbs. I've been so excited for it to come back. You know, the support that we've gotten from the community about us being gone and then wanting us to come back has been really cool too, obviously. So this whole thing has just been a really fun adventure, and to bring in season 3 with a guest as Zach is absolutely the best way to open up the show, I think, in my opinion. So we love having you
second
here, obviously.
Time. Yeah, this is the second episode one of a season that Zach's been on, so it feels like tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This All right. is perfect.
Very cool.
So on this episode of the first episode of season 3 for the AM Hookah Podcast, we're going to be talking about some really fun stuff. We're gonna do some general talk about HMDs, hookah, and heat management a little bit and stuff like that. And then I thought it'd be cool. You know, we've already done the interview with Zach. We've already talked about tobacco with Zach. So let's do a deep dive and talk about what it means to be a content creator on YouTube. Like actually, like the motivation, like you spoke about earlier, about the for the first time you wanted to really prep some stuff and get things prepared and ready. I thought it'd be a really nice conversation with, I would say you're probably the largest US-based hookah reviewer on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for a long time, so a lot of years I've put into this. But lately, I mean, the feedback that I'm getting from people, the amount of comments I'm getting, people asking me questions, and telling me my videos are helpful. Before, like, the viewership wasn't as much, so I wouldn't get a lot of feedback from someone saying, hey, this video helped me, or should I buy this new product, and thank you for steering me this direction. Now I'm getting that feedback, so it really means a lot to me, and that's what's motivating me to keep doing this. And like I said, this year is going to be awesome. All these new products lined up, and I'm ready to do it for these guys.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's going to be a real fun conversation. But let's go ahead and talk as we always do. You know what? I forgot a couple things that I wanted to make sure to try and hit at the beginning of every show.
There's a couple little announcements we're supposed to do, too. I am not seeing them in the notes.
Okay.
And I want to make sure you get to that.
Hell yeah.
Because I will drive to Idaho and punch you in the mouth if we forget.
My goodness. I love the aggression that Adrian brings on every show. Where's your sunglasses? No, I'm kidding. Why don't you talk about some of those cool, exciting...
Where are my sunglasses?
Some of the cool stuff that we have to talk about to start off our new year. At the end of last season, we talked about how we wanted to bring somebody onto the team to help us with the podcast in a lot of ways. And I have to tell you that I am super excited to welcome onto our team. If you actually type into the chat right now, Nightbot is still there, but Nightbot is there for only one reason. Okay, just one reason. He's there just to help with the automated commands. That's it. Because that'd be too much to ask of our producer to, like, every time somebody types something random, they have to remember to type something else in. So if you type right now, exclamation point, the Brack Daddy, you're going to find out that our very good friend, Bracken Cox, is going to be taking over the producer role of the AM Hookah podcast, and we couldn't be more excited to welcome him to the team. Honestly, we already have been working and doing lots of stuff behind the scenes with him, and he's been super helpful. We've been able to advance a lot of our ideas already. That's been really exciting. So everybody, if you could just say congratulations, Bracken, or hashtag Bracken or something, because I can't tell you it's going to be super exciting to have him a part of the show as it already has been. And then what are some of the other announcements that we have, Adrian?
Well, this is a repeat announcement, but I also do want to shout out Captain Wetbeard. He's a little part of the team too. He's handling everything Facebook. We wanted someone who was native to Facebook, and he's very good at what he does there. And he's very active on our Facebook. So we figured, let's just put this guy in charge. So also, he's here, and he's been a long time watcher of the show. So we're very excited to have him on as well.
Yes. So another announcement. I know we have a lot of stuff in the front half of the show. Apologies, but we will get to the fun stuff. I promise you we will. A couple of small things that we want to mention is that we're changing our schedule that we're doing. So Monday is still going to be the normal AM Hookah podcast, which is going to be, which is today, which is right now at the normal schedule time of, 6:30 Central Time, 4:30 Pacific Time, 5:30 Mountain Standard Time. We're not going to go for a straight hour. We're going to aim for going for an hour and a half as long as the conversation permits. If the conversation is good and interesting, we'll keep talking about it basically. And then we're changing the game cast. It used to be on Tuesday nights. It is now going to be on Wednesday nights. It's moving all the way to Wednesday night, still about the same time. And then we are actually adding a new show, Adrian.
We don't know anything about it.
No. Don't type TD, exclamation point TD, into the chat. Don't do it. I promise you're not going to like it. I don't know. You may like it. We'll have more details on Friday. Let me say this. Sub to the channel, hit that bell icon, and be prepared and ready for something exciting that's going to be happening on Fridays.
Chill. Keep shilling, Matt. Don't stop.
I'm trying. Go buy our merchandise. Go to our Instagram. Go to our Twitch account. Go to our Twitter account. We'll talk more about that stuff as we get new. But let's go ahead and jump into the show now. I think we talked about most of the stuff in the beginning. If we didn't, I hope somebody will remind us. I see chat's going crazy. I will try to get some stuff going from there as soon as possible. And then also, let's talk about what we're smoking. And because me and Adrian have been talking and hogging everything, let's start with Zach. Zach, I see you're smoking out of that sexy looking MIG, but what is inside of that MIG?
What's your question? I'm sorry.
What are you, what's inside the MIG? What are you smoking?
Oh, well, there's water inside, but in the bowl I have, a mix of a natural order from Trifecta and some Serpent Sting Mint mixed. Ooh. And it's smoking very, very well. And it's my first few bowls out of this MIG. I just got it in. And this thing does live up to the hype. It smokes like a dream, and I love smoking out of it.
So you are an adopter of the Serpent line from Starbucks. You do like the Sting Mint, then?
I like Sting Mint. I've had a few of the other flavors. John actually packed me Lioness when I was hanging out with him. And it was probably one of the grossest things I smoked in a long time.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you just said that, because I tried Lioness and thought it was horrible, too. I was like, I'm going
to. It was so bad. I was, like, so embarrassed to say something to John. I'm like, John, this is not good, man. And he's like, whoa, I'm glad you said something, because I thought you were enjoying it. And I was like, no, this is terrible. This stuff is crap. So I've not smoked a lot of Serpent, but Sting Mint came highly recommended from a friend. So I decided to check it out, and I actually really love it. It's a fantastic mint flavor.
I like Sting Mint, too. That was one of the couple of flavors that I got to try, and I thought it was actually pretty good as well. I think the MIGs are absolutely beautiful, and they're great smoking hookahs. They're kind of like, it's weird, because they're very nice looking, but they're also kind of like plain looking. The vase is definitely almost the star of those MIGs, because everything is so like standardized and very, I don't know, industrial, but like those vases just look so nice on those MIGs. There's something about...
And they're super high quality. I mean, the threading is gorgeous. I mean, everything is really, really nice. But I have two of them, both mini-me's. I have a Comfort and the Premium. And I mean, both of them are just top-notch. So I don't know if I'd spend the money on them, but smoking out of them, it's a dream.
They're very cool. What about you, Adrian? What are you smoking? If anybody wants to know what we are smoking after the fact, by the way, you can do exclamation point smoke, and it'll give you a little bit of information on what me and Adrian are smoking. But Adrian, if you could walk us through your actual setup, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, because we have to fill an hour and a half, I'll go ahead and do this. White Matte Pear. It's probably my daily driver now. Eddie has questioned me a few times on it being my daily driver. He's like, won't it discolor? The grommet, absolutely. The hookah has held up. I've probably had like 400 sessions out of it. It's holding up pretty well so far. The Lux base, and you can't see it. I'm actually going to see that base thing. Mm-hmm, Maggie, thank you so much. I use it exclusively on the Suga. And then I've got the retro, what is it? The 80 feet resurrection bowl with Starbuzz vintage morning breeze, which is kind of like a citrusy tea flavor. It's very good if you like vintage. And yeah, it's good. Three titanium flats and a provost, a broken provost, like most of us have.
Mine hasn't broken yet, so I'm knock on wood for that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't broke my provost yet. Me and Zach, we take extra good care of our stuff, I guess. Maybe that's why. No.
I just throw mine. So.
I've seen you throw stuff at your wall, Adrian. I know this is true. I know it is. So I am smoking my daily driver that I absolutely love, which is my Like Smoke. I use it all the time. It's my favorite hookah that I own, obviously, now. And then I'm actually smoking a mix of Alpha Kama Lemon Ginger, Alpha Kama Ice Pear, and then I had to throw in, because I love the taste of it so much, Trifecta Peppermint Shake. It is so, so good. Oh, I can't have enough of this stuff. That is
probably the best mint.
It is such a good mint, because it's not just a standard blow your head off mint. It has creaminess to it, it has sweetness to it. I love mints. When you smoke them, you can actually like taste the sugar of them a little bit. And that's exactly what this peppermint shake is to me. You can taste it. It's just very, very good. A huge fan of it. I see that we might have a question. If you have a question for the AM Hookah podcast or for Zach, put some question marks before it so that we can check out your question. Yeah, so in this transition of having a producer and somebody helping us kind of like moderate chat and stuff like that, if you want to get a hold of us with like an important question or something that you want to make sure that we hear about, drop something in front of it to notify Bracken or Captain Wetbeard, and they will notify us as well, so that hopefully we avoid us like kind of scanning through the chat a whole bunch and dead time and all those kinds of things. So please do that. Appreciate it if you could. And then what else was I going to go off of? Oh yeah, this mix is fantastic. It's absolutely great. It's using a provost, some cubes on it, and my Derek Moses hose, because why would I not use it? And then my sun pipe tip as well. So yeah, we got some good stuff that we're smoking. Let's see, where are we heading off to? Let's see, we just got somebody in our producer chat that we have. Caleb said that thanks to Matt or Adrian and Matt for the giveaway last season. Thanks to Zach for the 5,000 code for the Mason Onyx. The three of you are the reason why I am having a great and unique hookah stuff. That's pretty fantastic. Yeah, he was the winner of our huge giveaway, and then it sounds like he got one of those codes from the special thing that you did for your 5,000 sub thing that you did, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you got it, man. I'm glad you got your hands on it. Those are hard to get a hold of.
I miss mine. I broke mine a while back ago, and I still miss it every single day. I'm eager to get it again. Okay, let's see. Where should we go from here? I feel rusty. Adrian, direct me. What are we doing here?
Well, typically, with our current format, we, especially with three reviewers being here, we like to ask about any new videos, Matt.
Oh, I like that idea.
I know it's
been
an entire 2 weeks for you.
No, I feel broken right now. I like that idea. Let's talk about that a little bit. So, obviously, we all three do YouTube content. We are hookah reviewers, hookah enthusiasts and smokers, hobbyists, all those kinds of things. Zach has been putting out some really cool stuff. The videos that I can think of off the top of my head has been the what's in the box, or the unboxing that you're doing at work and stuff like that, which I think is pretty great. And then also your Cloud Lotus 2 review. Is there any other reviews or videos that you'd like to point the audience to in any way?
Soon to come, obviously the Sting Mint. I'm doing an update on a bolt combo setup that I think is super efficient for people who are wasting a lot of tobacco. I have a segment on using the Provost in combination with a mini Rook, Shisha Saver, Coal Saver. I will put that out for a lot of people who are not getting great results, so it's kind of my tip on that. And I'm probably going to do an update on the new Phoenix lid and a lot of heat management device testing, including the NAR. And I know we're going to jump into heat management devices later. That's been my focus. I've been doing a lot of testing on your favorite hookah, the versatile hookah.
I like it. I like it.
Fight.
I was actually going to smoke it today for you, but I decided not to bring up anything. So I didn't bring that one out. And the Cloud Storm hookah. So I've been doing a lot of testing. So
interested to hear about the Cloud Storm hookah. I've seen some pictures on Facebook and stuff like that. It definitely looks like a very intriguing looking hookah. Same thing with the Versatile. I think it looks really cool. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that too. We'll see what happens with the conversation and stuff. I want to say that if you did not know on Strictly Shisha, I'm sure everybody subscribed. If you're not, for some bizarre reason, go and head over to that channel. Some of the cool videos that he's done recently, as well with what he's talking about doing with the Provost and Mini Rook combo, is you've been doing kind of some really nice tutorials and walkthroughs. You did one for Tangiers. You went through your exact method of packing and stuff like that. And I almost feel like we as a community on YouTube have kind of stepped away from tutorials, and we've gone, you know, like a head dive into review. So it's nice to see those kinds of videos.
And that's kind of getting a lot of questions these days from people asking me. Before, my viewer base was a lot smaller. A lot of people who were watching me were already well-versed on hookah. They knew how to pack. They knew how to acclimate Tangiers. A lot of the newer viewers that I'm getting are asking for basics. They're like, hey, can you remind us what is a heat management device, how to use it? What do you mean by acclimation? Why doesn't Tangier smoke that well? So that's something I'm kind of focusing on. Going back to some of the basics and educating people on some of the things that I take for granted and know on a daily basis, I'd like to share that with some of the new smokers so they can enjoy the products that we enjoy.
I think that's a great idea, honestly. What about you, Adrian? What kind of new stuff have you been coming out with on your channel, and what stuff might we be seeing in the future from you as well?
My channel took a break with the AM Hookah podcast because, well, you know what we went through for the last 2 weeks trying to inaugurate our new members and get everything planned out for the season. But a video did drop 20 minutes before this video went live intentionally because I promote this video and that video because cross-pollination is a good thing. Think, think. It is on it's the final episode in my series that I'm doing on Alpha Kama's passion fruit, iced tea flavors. Mm-hmm. It's on passion fruit iced tea. It's a good flavor. Check it out if you haven't tried it. If you don't want to watch a video but you're wondering, pick it up. It's a good flavor. And then there's another video coming out after the podcast, actually. The Alphacra series is actually going to be bi-weekly now. Which is great because last year I was pretty bad about it. And then the Starbucks series will be the Monday following. And then I've got some other content I'd rather just deliver instead of talking about because it's not a review or a tutorial or an unboxing. So look at my channel.
I love, like, that's the cool thing about, I think I can say pretty confidently about all three of our channels that we have independently, is we really do focus on a lot of different stuff. I love the fact that Adrian does this very intensive look on, like, a certain style of tobacco. You know, you did that with the Alphacra series that you're still doing, going through each one of the flavors. It's more than just a review. It's also, like, almost a history lesson in the sense where it's like, this is Alphacra, these are the flavors from Alphacra, and, like, a whole bunch of information about it. And I think that's stellar. You know, the awesome tutorial stuff that Zach has been doing on his channel recently, and then just the content that he puts out on a regular basis. And then me, when it comes to my channel, you can find me at Matt Dezen, obviously. But my stuff, I try to focus on mixed videos and then also these kind of like 3 to 4 minute reviews that are very like cut and dry, where it's very quick, get to the point and move on to the next thing kind of. It's been something that I've been trying to push for a long time, and it's something that I want to keep doing as we move forward with the future and stuff. My mixed videos, I have a blast doing those videos. Those are some of my favorite videos that I get to put together, edit, and build and stuff like that. My next review is going to be on this peppermint shake. That is what, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that it's a great flavor and that you need to go out and buy it, but I'm going to do a review on it anyways because I feel so inclined, because it is such a good smoke. It really is. Let's see. I see some stuff maybe going on in chat a little bit. It looks like Cecile the Ocean rewatched the Tangiers one today to make sure that they're doing it right. But been a minute, worth a watch if any of y'all are in chat haven't. Oh, if anyone in chat hasn't checked out that Tangiers video, he's saying to go ahead and check it out. Big Vinny is here as well, says, I watched Strictly Shisha. I watched your Zomo reviews. Somebody here is a fan. There's a lot of fun stuff going on inside of the chat at the moment. It feels weird to not try to focus on chat because I'm trusting our producers and stuff like that. I just feel like I need to Yeah, I don't know.
We noticed at the end of last season that we were spending a lot of time during the show scrolling through chat, which is not entertaining and not interactive. And we want to be entertaining and interactive, so get it?
Yeah, that's
speaking of passion fruit, my review on LaCroix passion fruit is coming up soon. Very good flavor.
5 out of 5, right?
5 out of 7. 7 out of 7.
Naphael just said, want to get a Provost. I don't know how to use it. You don't got to worry about Naphael because the Provost is the easiest hookah tool to use. And this is actually a really good transition because we're going to head into our topic of the show, which is the HMDs section of it. Something that I've said for a long time about the Provost is that I don't really consider it a traditional heat management device. I mean, you do manage your heat with it and stuff like that. But what I've always considered the Provost, and I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on it as well, is to me, the Provost is a hookah tool. It is like the most needed accessory. To me, you need, you know, tongs so you can pick up your charcoal. You need foil so you can put it over your bowl. But like, to me, you need to have a Provost. Like, I think it's just too valuable not to have one because of what it does and the simplicity to use it. What are your thoughts about that, Zach?
Yeah, I love the Provost. I always tell people it is the cheapest piece of crap metal device ever, but it's very, very effective. And on the video that I just mentioned, talking about simplicity of saving money, costs, it works so well. It's super efficient. Two coals I'm sure you guys are using, and your bowls are heated up nicely. It's working so well. It's one of those heat management devices. You set it, forget it, and it manages the heat for you. And that is kind of, I know you don't think it's a heat management device, but someone made a, Terry on one of the groups made a funny comment about a heat management device, is you shouldn't have to manage your heat management device. And that's something that's great about the Provost. You put your coals in there and that thing rips. It's compatible with a lot of different bowls and it just works. And so I definitely recommend it as well. And that's something I've been using this past week a lot. When you're using traditional heat management devices like the Lotus, like the NAR, sometimes it's really nice to go back to the Provost because it's so simple and it works.
What a good segue too, talking about, because obviously you bring up the point that it really is a heat management device at its core, but the way we use the term HMD is so, it's subjective from person to person. We all use it a little bit differently, which I think is very interesting. Because a lot of people do forget that when you say like heat management device, it's all kind of in the name. The device is in charge of managing your heat. And I find that some of these devices aren't very good at it. And some of them are very good at it. Like the Provost, like you said, it's a garbage piece of metal device. And it's funny that like no one's taking the initiative to build like a device that does the same thing, but is built well. And because of that, we keep giving Apple on top all of our money, which I guess they're probably pretty happy about.
Or Apple on top should just make a better version.
Yeah.
It would be cool.
It would take them 2 seconds to put a proper like bolt in there. This pop rivet crap.
It would be cool to see them like do something with the Provost and see exactly what they're going, if they ever want to, you know, innovate on top of it. A lot of people may not know this, but the Provost that the majority of people use now is a version 2 of the original Provost. The original Provost did not have any ridges on the bottom of it. It was just purely poked holes and stuff like that. The lid is slightly different than what it used to be as well. But there is this, the common day Provost that the majority of people use are a version 2 of the original Provost. A lot of people probably didn't get it back in the day. It used to only come with the Apple on top bowl. That's the only way you could get the Provost at one time. And then they started to sell it separately on its own. And that's kind of the version that a lot of people are used to seeing nowadays.
It was an accident. I don't actually think they intended for us to use it in this manner. It wasn't designed for this. And somehow we decided to use it totally different than it was designed. And I bet you, in my opinion, the Apple on top Provost is one of the things that's keeping that brand alive. I doubt anyone buys those bowls anymore. I doubt they really sell much of anything else. I think the Provost is their main product line. And I think it was made by accident. I think they got pretty lucky with it.
I could not agree more. It is definitely a case of potato chips. You know, nobody knew they were going to love it until they finally tried it. And they're like, wow, this works really, really nicely. And I think that is exactly what it is as well, honestly. But it would be cool if they ever did do a revision of it or tried to innovate in some way, the same way that Cloud has recently been doing a lot of innovation with their products. You know, we had the Cloud Lotus for the longest time. Then we had the Cloud Vitria Bowl that was meant for the Cloud Lotus to fit inside of. Then we had the Cloud XL or the Cloud Plus, you know, the larger version of it that it seemed like had a pretty good reputation. At least that's what it seemed like to me. A lot of people seemed to like it pretty well. And now we have the Cloud Lotus 2, which is a pod looking device, very interesting looking. I would say that it's been kind of a mixed bag of treats. I've tried a Cloud Lotus before, didn't get the Cloud Plus. I don't have the Cloud Lotus 2 or anything like that. Zach, you are very versed on all the cloud products. What are your thoughts and opinions of the cloud line of HMDs?
The original Lotus Revolutionary really changed the game for me, and I think a lot of other people. And what I said in my video is I think it really sparked the industry itself and to take us away from traditional smoking and see that we could do a lot more with it. So the original Lotus, fantastic. The Lotus Plus, just very subtle changes I think were necessary, similar to what I think they should do with the Provost. I love the Cloud Lotus Plus. The Lotus 2, for me, it's super picky on bowls, and it doesn't work that well. If you use it with a V-Tray, use it like a few select really, really deep bowls, you can get some awesome results, but it's a little over-engineered. Sometimes I'm noticing with all these new heat management devices, which I have the Stratuses, I have the NAR, sometimes the more simple it is, the better it works. When you have all these airflow manipulations and toggles and things like that, they just don't seem to be working that well. So I recommend Provost and the Lotus Plus for my daily use, and that's what I'm using right now. I am using the Lotus Plus, and it works like a dream for me.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Adrian, you have experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, I too am a fan of Lotus Plus. The biggest thing for me is not only does it hold three cubes, most of the time it'll hold three cubes, but those raised bumps on the inside really help a lot with the blacking out issue that I do have with my, I guess it's the Mach 2 original Cloud Lotus, the one that's matte instead of that shiny finish, because I had that as well, and it works, but for me, not quite as well.
Like I said, I don't have any experience with the Cloud Lotus line of things. It kind of takes back to that idea of the Provost and the simplicity of it, right? Like, you shouldn't have to manage your heat management device. And one of the really nice things about the Provost is just how simple it is to use. One of the other heat management devices that I feel is pretty easy to use as well is the Phoenix. I go back and forth from like almost like a love-hate relationship with the Phoenix because I really do like it a lot. But it's easier to use a Provost. So it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, do I want to deal with something or fiddle with something in a way, or do I just want to just smoke with the Provost? And usually I will fall with just wanting to smoke with the Provost. I still like the Phoenix. I think it's a very well-made device, and I think it works very well in all those different measurements of success for it and stuff. But still, I prefer to use my Provost more than anything else. But I know you did a really good video on the Phoenix not too long ago where you said that you were kind of falling back in love with it or starting to enjoy it again. Do you still use the Phoenix on a regular basis, Zach, or is it something that you don't use quite a lot?
So I think the Phoenix is a pretty awesome device, and they were, as they've now stated in all their advertisements, the first heat management device that prevents ash from going into your bowl. I think the design is genius. I think the lid is what's really hindering my love for it. And one thing that's beautiful about the Provost, you can throw your two coals in there or whatever you like, pack a certain way, put your lid on there and literally forget it and get a certain amount of time out of your bowl. Or if you want, probably like us, we get the most out of it. We pack a certain way so we can prop the lid, then put the lid on more and then close it. And that is what I like to do. And with that, with the Phoenix, I can't do that. The lid is very limiting. There's no airflow vents, and it's a little too simple on the lid design. I think the bottom plate design is awesome. It works very well. Being that it's made from really high quality material, it does need a little bit more heat than I would prefer. But that's just, in my opinion, you just adjust your pack a little bit, use a little more shallow bowl, pack a little higher, and then you can reduce the amount of heat that you need. So my love-hate with it is that it's an awesome device, but the lid is a little bit limiting in with my control of the heat itself. So basically, I put lid on or off. That's all I can really do. And then I have to kind of manipulate the heat with the amount of coals and maybe prop one out and things like that. And it's just a little bit more limiting than the Provost is. Provost, which the person who asked how to use the Provost, I have a video on this, and I've seen some picture tutorials online. But it's pretty cool because you can leave it off and smoke it. Then you can kind of prop it on the actual leaf itself. Then you can prop it on the side. Then you can put it flat on. Then you can close the vent. So it's a lot more control when you're actually smoking, and you can get that longevity. With the Provost and Serpent, I was getting like an hour and 45 minutes with two cube charcoal, and it's so simple to do. You know, it's really easy.
Naphael in the chat says the Cloud 2 looks nice, but it is bad with working with all bowls. In your experience, you have a very vast collection of bowls, obviously, Zach. How many would you say that works with? Is it like 5 to 10? Is it, you know, 1 to 5? Where does it how many bowls out of the collection you have does it actually work with?
Out of 50 bowls, maybe 5 bowls.
Ooh.
That's not a good rate.
No, and with those bowls, they're really, really deep bowls. Like some of my really deep original stone bowls, I mean, they're like, if you were to dense pack in those things, we're talking like 50 grams. They're super deep. They're bowls that I don't prefer to use. Like when Stone first started making bowls, I prefer more of a shallow bowl, less tobacco. So because of that interior design on the, that plate, it doesn't work well. The vents are on the outside now, so it has to have a 3-inch diameter. When on the other Lotus, on the Provost, you can use, even on the Phoenix, you can use bowls in varying diameter. So you're limited to a 3-inch in diameter bowl. And then also if the spire height is too high, it cuts off airflow completely. And then if the spire height is even correct, so you have a lot of variables there you got to fit with bowls. Even if the spire height is correct and you pack too densely, you're cutting off all the airflow. So the person who said they're having trouble fitting with bowls, yeah, 50 bowls and barely 5 work. And we're talking, even when one good fellow works, it doesn't mean other good fellows will work because they're all handmade bowls. The spires are all different. You know, a little bit of a wonky spire with foil, no problem. With the Provost, no problem. With any other heat management device, it's okay. With this, it has to be absolutely perfect. And the way the bowl game is right now, they're not perfect unless you're getting something like a Mason bowl where it's cast and every bowl is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And even in my Mason bowl, I can't do a dense pack. I packed some beautiful bowls. I was so excited to smoke these bowls. And I got on there and I took a hit and it was completely sealed. I basically had to prop the Lotus off to the side and purposely see the tobacco to allow airflow to come in there. And it was a miserable session. So I couldn't recommend that product to anyone unless you have 50 bowls and you want to take the gamble that maybe 5 will work.
That's the thing. I got about 35 bowls. So at that rate, it's going to fit on about 2 to 3 of mine. And it's like you said it best, that issue of even when you have a bowl that it will work with, you can't just go order more of that bowl to get that device to work because there is variance with handmade bowls, which is, like you said, not normally an issue. But when there's a device out there that makes it into an issue, I think it becomes more of a hassle than it's worth.
We got a really, really good question, actually, from chat from Raul. He just said, thoughts on flavor loss using HMDs, which I think is really cool. To be honest, it's been a long time since I've used pure foil in comparison to using a Provost or the Phoenix and stuff like that. I will say that I noticed that my sessions last the absolute longest when I use my Phoenix. I think they last for me personally, like almost an unsmokable amount of time. Like I don't smoke for 3 hours and stuff, but like I feel like with my Phoenix, it can go for almost as long as I want to push it personally. I've never really noticed too much of a flavor loss. With that said, I don't know how to compare it to something like using foil since I don't do it very often. I don't think I'm losing too much flavor when I use the Provost. For instance, Trifecta, they actually recommend that you only use foil when you smoke their product. They don't want you to use a Provost. What do you think, Adrian? Do you notice? I see you very regularly using pure coal on foil and also using the Provost pretty often as well. What do you think? Do you notice a flavor loss of any kind when you go from one to the other?
With the Provost, not so much. The Provost is, I think, as close as you can get with going coal on foil without going just coal on foil. But with certain devices like the Lotus, this happens with the Phoenix sometimes. Specifically, we're using a heat management device as intended with no foil. I know some people will actually use the new foil with the Phoenix method, which is a kind of a weird thing people have come to.
It works.
I've done it. It works. Not better than just coal, though, so I'm not going to do it. I do notice, I don't know if it's flavor loss so much as a flavor profile change. Some tobaccos, it'll pull out different notes than others. And I think that's because when you have like coal, you're heating up 2 to 3 very specific spots in the bowl, and then it gradients between the spots where your coals actually are. So there's like a high heat intensity on certain places on your bowl, probably pulling out different flavors. Whereas a heat management device does a good job of heating the bowl completely and evenly. And I think that might produce, for some tobaccos, a slightly different flavor profile. I think Zach's actually talked about this at some point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so like you said, Trifecta is designed in the way he balances flavor to do it with foil. And I've packed him many bowls. I've smoked with him many times. I'll pack him bowls of his own tobacco that he smokes so much of with a heat management device, and he almost cannot recognize it. He could actually say that that's not my tobacco. That's not my flavor. So I think you're right. It is a very different profile, but in my opinion, based off my experience, I think there is actually a lot more flavor when it comes to using a heat management device. Like just recently, I switched from using the Provost past few days to using a heat management device today. And I mean, I just think the flavors are so much more enhanced, but it can enhance different notes. So it will change the profile. But I find the flavor to be a lot more pure, a lot more bold when using a heat management device.
I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to smoke peppermint shake with just foil because it's been so long, and I feel like that would be a good one to kind of clear my palate with a little bit, at least. Because I've been doing it so often that if I smoke it with just foil, I'm going to have a good idea of what it tastes like with and without it. So I'm going to have to try that real soon. We got another really good question from the chat. Hookah Tanner just said to Zach, actually, how are you liking the NAR? And before you answer, I want to say, from somebody who doesn't have one, who has very little interest in getting one, I think it looks not good. I think it looks very tedious. I think it looks very cumbersome. I also think it looks, and this could just be me, so let me know what you guys think about this as well. But to me, this reminds me of like a device that was created for somebody who thinks they understand what hookah smoking is. Like it looks like a novelty item. And that's one of the things that I don't like about it. I feel like it's almost pulling us back in our hobby in a lot of ways and like making it something that it actually isn't. It could just be me that thinks that, obviously. I like I said, I don't have one. I don't feel like I'm hearing wonderful reviews for the majority of it on Facebook and stuff. Some people seem to really like it. Some people are really enjoying it. And some people seem to not like it at all. So it's kind of hard to gauge. What have you been thinking about it so far, Zach?
So my testing with it is pretty limited. I actually got it in, and then I was working on the Lotus 2, so I gave it to a buddy of mine to test out. And something he noticed right off the bat was, A, it's a pain in the butt to use. It heat fluctuates like super crazy. It goes from being absolutely dead to like burning. And he says the flavor profile when smoking with the NAR is extremely enhanced, and there's like so much flavor from it. And I do a lot of testing of different heat management devices and even developing them, and that's one thing that I've noticed a lot. Some devices can enhance the flavor so much that like you can taste the flavor in your mouth, and it's like almost like drinking the juice. And that's how he described using the NAR to me. My experience with the NAR, it's like that thermometer thing in the middle, it's just kind of a pain in the butt because
does it come off?
You need to be able to stick that in the middle.
Does it come off? Can you take that part off?
I'm sure you could. There's a bolt in there. I'm sure you could take it. I have it somewhere if you really want to see it.
It's on
the But yeah, and it's actually the interior diameter is quite small because the walls on it are super, super thick because they've integrated the vents in there. And you cannot fit 3 cubes in there. I mean, mushing them down, they're not going to fit. So it's quite big, cumbersome. The handle situation is kind of weird. I don't really like that. And the whole temperature thing, honestly, I feel like it's going to make people overthink things and really ruin their sessions. But like my buddy Samir used it, and he's like, Zach, I will never use that thing again. It's a piece of trash.
Oh, man.
Okay. And isn't it kind of misleading? Because the actual sensor for that thermometer goes right in between the coals, which isn't an accurate representation of the heat at the bottom of your heat management device, which is all that matters.
Yeah. It's so why,
that's kind of strange, too.
It's why it's getting readings like 800 degrees and 900 degrees and like 750 degrees. Like, that's not an actual representation of what your tobacco is being cooked at. If it was, That'd just go up in flames. It would literally combust.
You would be smoking a non-combustion type of tobacco, and a combustion method would not be good.
No,
and that's what he was noticing, and he explained it to me. I noticed it a little bit. It could be reading 700, and you could be smoking for 15, 20 minutes when it should be properly heated, and you'll get no smoke, and you're like, this thing doesn't work. And then 20 minutes into the session, 30 minutes later, I mean, that thing is just burning at 700 degrees. I mean, and it just doesn't make any sense. The coals are actually touching that thermometer. I just think it's gimmicky, and it's probably geared towards people not like us, people who probably don't even really know what a Lotus is. They're going to pick it up in their local head shop, see a Starbuzz heat management device, and they're going to be like, wow, that's cool. I've never even seen something other than foil, and that's probably where their market share is. It's probably not with people like us. Like I said, my testing is limited, though, but I so far do not like it. And also, fitment with bowls is also a problem.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're going to come out with a product this late in the game, something similar to what I disagree with Cloud did, make improvements to it. Listen to what our feedback is, or anyone's feedback, and make step improvements. And I think that's something the Phoenix did a little bit.
Yeah.
Addressed, you know, fitment issues. They've addressed a lot of other things. But then that one just like reverted back to like the first heat management device ever. You know, that thing came out 5 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, this is pretty cool. But now in the game, it just seems very rudimentary, honestly.
You know, I wonder if it's a bit of a disconnect with the audience and the market. Because you got to think, Cloud might have a distorted view. Because when they first put out the original Cloud Lotus, you saw companies making bowls specifically to fit the Cloud Lotus.
Yes.
But now that there's kind of a standardized heat management device size and the way we use them, that's not so much happening anymore. So I wonder if maybe Cloud is hoping that the market will shift towards making those 3-inch diameter bowls. And I just don't think they will, especially not with the hyper enthusiasts like us typically trying to save tobacco and going darkly for a lot of the time, too.
Well, I think the market did shift naturally like a few years ago. I mean, at one point you had only bowls just like the Harmony on the market that had a 3-inch in diameter. And I bet you there was some sort of correlation to why Cloud chose that size, because, you know, that was a bowl that was available. It kind of worked for their sizing. And it, like I said, it was just kind of luck and it worked out. Now you see every company comes out with a 3-inch standard bowl, whether, you know, it's a Symphony, a Goodfella, 100 other bowls on the market. I think Cloud did shift the market in the way the bowls were designed. But now that we've gotten away from just using heat management devices and things like the Provost are more popular, I think we're going back towards smaller bowls now. Now you see the Rook Mini is a lot more popular, the Apache Minis. These smaller bowls are becoming a lot more popular, and the larger bowls are getting phased out because people like us can get amazing sessions packing 15 grams of tobacco and using two coals and not having to pack 40 grams of tobacco in a giant tri-mini bowl, you know, with three or four charcoal. You know, it just doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
I would say the one exception to that rule is people who like to smoke them. I know, Zach, you're not a big fan of this. I know you keep up on it, but like the Jordan style, the Lebanese style tobaccos, those work very well in the larger bowls. But I think this community has shifted away from brands like that. Brands that you really do want a little bit of depth because the flavor profile is already pretty muted for brands like Alfacker, Alwaha, Alfacama is actually on their game. But I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Jeremy Bird has a really good question in the chat as well. If you guys have a question that you'd like to ask us in chat, make sure you drop a couple question marks in front of it so that we're able to notice them and get them into the stream as quickly as possible. But Jeremy Bird says, are bowls getting smaller and smaller? What do you think about this? Are you noticing that even some of the bowls that are coming out, are they just trying to get to that very as small as humanly possible? Or what do you think?
Definitely. Well, first of all, he actually said our bowls are getting smaller and smaller. It was more of a statement, I think.
Oh, okay.
But that said, in the interest of answering it as if it were a question, I completely agree. I think that even me, I tend to just use I still got an old fudge bowl that I use. I think the biggest bowl that I use on a super regular basis is like an 80 feet bowl, you know, and that's almost not even a shisha saver anymore. That's almost the standard size because you can smoke a blonde leaf out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely interesting. Some of the smaller bowls that I have in my collection are things like the Bambino 80 feet bowl. And some of these bowls are smaller bowls, but they're not necessarily depth-wise small, right? Like the 80 feet bowl is obviously a very small bowl, but it does have a good depth to it. I think it's better for smoking a blonde leaf than it is a dark leaf in comparison to it, where the Bambino is a true small bowl. It's both shallow and a small diameter around it as well. Even the Relics ring, which actually is the best of both worlds in the fact that it's a small bowl and it has a shallow diameter to it. But because of that ring, you're able to put like your Provost in it without any worry. Sometimes I don't like the way the Provost sits on my Bambino or my 80 feet bowl, but I love the way that it fits inside my Relics ring because it holds it in there nice and securely. What about you, Zach? What do you think? Are bowls getting smaller and smaller? Do you gravitate towards smaller bowls on a regular?
Yeah, definitely. I don't like to smoke for more than one round of tobacco. So I like to get my nice hour and a half amazing out of that tobacco, and then I pack a new one. So for me, packing a 30-gram bowl is a waste. And I think that it's a combination of a lot of things. We're learning how to smoke tobacco more efficiently now. People are getting more educated so that we can use less tobacco to get amazing results. I remember when I first started smoking, the way I would rip my clouds, you know, when I first started smoking, was pack a lot of tobacco in a big bowl like a Harmony bowl, put four charcoal on there, and it was just a lot of surface area to burn so I could get those amazing clouds.
Yeah.
Now we can do that with a Relics bowl with 13 to 15 grams and still get amazing clouds and things like that. As well as I think there's a shift to dark leaf now too.
Yeah.
Before, when a lot of people were just smoking blonde leaf, you needed a little bit more because, you know, you're fluff packing, things like that. So you need a little bit larger capacity. Now when the market has shifted, at least with enthusiasts, to a lot more dark leaf, you're packing it more dense, you don't need that capacity anymore. So that's why I think these bowls are making a resurgence with these smaller bowls again, because we've learned a lot and our habits have changed.
I think so too. Do you consider a wind cover to be an HMD or is it just gimmicky? I think that a wind cover is the original HMD. It was to control your heat. It was a device of sorts. You did put it on there to make things get a little bit hotter. You put it on there outside so the wind wouldn't affect it and stuff like that. Obviously, it's called, there you go, a wind cover. You can use it in conjunction with your other HMDs as well. I don't think it's gimmicky. I think that it has a purpose and a place. I just think we use it less and less, especially with something like, you know, what you're using right now, which I'm not sure. Is it the Ignis? Is that what you're smoking with, Zach?
I'm actually doing a little bit of a Frankenstein here. I have a Lotus Plus on top or on the bottom, And then I'm having an Ignis lid on top because I can't find my Lotus lid at the moment.
Well, it does have a lid, which is kind of what I was saying, because you don't need a wind cover when you have a lid unless you want to make it get hotter inside of the actual area that's cooking your tobacco and stuff. But I don't consider a wind cover to be gimmicky. I just consider it to be a wind cover.
It works, but I just think there's a little bit more efficient tools that all of us have now. So you don't need them as much. When I first started smoking, I used a wind cover because it's all I had. It was either foil and a wind cover or whatever. I used to watch videos back in the day on how to make wind covers at home. You know, obviously it's a stupid idea now to use cans, but that's something I used to remember doing, you know, and that was all we had at the time. And that was revolutionary. To now we can encase the heat and it works even better. You get even more longevity out of it. I do find a wind cover to be particularly useful if you're smoking outside in really cold environments. You know, that heat is dissipated very, very quickly. Now you can keep it in and it actually works very well.
Or literally just using it if you're I smoke outside on my porch during the warm, like the 3 warm months we have here in Michigan. And I use my wind cover because it's kind of windy here. So
wind cover. As a wind cover. Oh.
Yeah. Look at that. But to answer the question in the best way I can, it's been outdated. If there's one reason to keep a wind cover around, I wouldn't buy one. This is just for the people who still have them and spray painted them black with heat treated paint. You can use them to elongate your session by roughly 10 minutes. That's really all they're good for. And it's going to dissipate pretty quickly after the fact, because once your coals are getting down to the size where they're not properly heating your bowl, adding this bit of cover isn't actually going to elongate your session that much. It's actually not worth the investment of $15 or whatever they want to charge for a wind cover.
I find myself, especially on a night where I'm watching a movie and I just want to smoke for another like 15, 20 minutes and I'm not going to put another round on, I'll just take a piece of foil and just wrap it around a little bit, and I can pseudo control the heat by not scrunching it in. And then 10 minutes later, I'll scrunch it in a little bit and almost close it to just squeeze out that just a little bit more time out of those coals so I can enjoy it for a few more minutes and not have to be lazy and go outside and get more coals. So I think they're still useful. And I still, every now and then when I'm super lazy, will grab a piece of foil and wrap it around when I'm not using a heat management device and I'm using foil.
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to use a wind cover as intentionally planned, either if you're using it outside on a windy night or if you're just trying to get just a little bit more time out of your session. Okay, so going over some of the smaller things that we have inside of our topic for HMDs and stuff like that, what do you think makes a good HMD? Adrian, when you are looking to buy an HMD or if you are going to look for one, I know you have a few at your disposal, but if you wanted to go buy one that's on the market today, what do you think makes a good HMD?
That's a really good question. For me, the big things are going to be versatility. How much of my product that I already own can I use this on? And do I need to go purchase more product in addition to the HMD? Because if so, it's a no-go. Is it efficient? You know, this is the nice part about having some. It's not like it used to be, but there's still some active reviewers that cover this stuff. And I appreciate it because I use them to make my purchasing decisions, which I think is really the value in having reviewers. And cost. There's some HMDs I've seen hit a price point that's unreasonable when you can just pick up a Provost for $30 and be happy. Mm-hmm. For me, those are probably the three big things.
That makes sense. What about you, Zach? What do you think makes a good HMD? You obviously have, I would say, a larger collection of HMDs than either me or Adrian. And out of all the ones that you have, I think you can kind of answer this the best way. What makes a good HMD? What makes a good heat management device?
Compatibility with bowls, as Adrian said, you don't want to have to buy your heat management device and go buy bowls to use it with. You should be buying in reverse. You should be buying a heat management device that can work with your bowls, unless you have poor quality bowls, and that's a different story. Efficiency of use, I mean, do you need 4 coals to use it? Like, for example, the Fumo WindGuard I had a while back, I mean, you had to use 4 coals. That wasn't efficient, so that didn't work for me. In addition, just like, I mean, how do the handles work? Is it cumbersome to use? Am I going to burn things because it's just I gotta unscrew the gnar, for example, while I'm smoking it? Like, that's just not really useful to me. Things like preheating are not important to me. I know one of the biggest selling points of the gnar is that you can preheat it. That's like the only claim to fame that they have right now, is that you can preheat it and it has a thermometer. That's not something I personally find important. I like to slowly warm up my bowls. That's something I look for. But definitely simplicity, ease of use, efficiency, and compatibility with bowls. Price for me, It is a factor, but I want to enjoy every moment of my session. I'm not going to spend exorbitant amounts of money on a heat management device, but I'm not going to quibble over $5 or $10 if I know that device is going to really give me awesome sessions every time. nothing is more frustrating. You know, you guys work hard, you guys are busy, when you have a bad session. You know, you want to smoke and you want it to rip and you want to enjoy every minute of it and you don't want it to be bad, you know?
Yes.
And I'm never going to be the person who takes off my heat management device, salvages a tobacco and like put another one on there or something. No, I'm just going to dump it. I'm even going to get fresh coals. So I want it to work and I want it to work well. So if that costs me a few extra dollars, then I'm okay with that. But if they start charging $150 for a heat management device, I'm going to have problems with it.
That will. You know? Oh, my goodness. That will be the day.
When it becomes the price of a reasonable hookah, you might have a problem.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but like the Lotus 2, for example, is on the highest end of the spectrum when it comes to heat management devices. But when you guys hold that thing in hand, you'll see there is a lot of engineering that went into that. And I could see why if the original one is 55, this one has to be 65. It kind of makes sense to me. I don't actually think Cloud is trying to cheat us out of $10. I think that it probably went a little bit more work into making that, and maybe they are saving money now, and you know they can produce it for cheaper. But it kind of makes sense that it is $10 more.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
I'm not really mad at that price. The Phoenix made from super high quality material. If that costs what it costs, I mean, I'm not really that mad at it.
Yeah, I completely see what you're saying with that. We actually ran a poll inside of our AM Hookah group on Facebook. If you guys are interested in checking that out, go and find us. Just do a search for AM Hookah and you'll find our page and our group as well. Ask to join into the group and we'll get you in there very quickly. We had a poll that was ran by Captain Wetbeard, our moderator in there. He says, what is your favorite HMD heat management device? And we had quite a few votes that went through this. And the one that ran away with it the most was definitely the AOT Provost. That ran away. It got over 20
by
votes.
By a long score. Shot.
Yeah. It won it by over, but with 20 votes of actually being the best one, and then the one that followed directly underneath it was the Phoenix HMD. Those are two of the better devices in the community. I mean, there's still a lot of love for Cloud, don't get me wrong. People still enjoy it and use it and stuff like that. But I think overall, people are definitely gravitating towards the Provost and the Phoenix and stuff like that. So I think it's pretty great. The very last question that I think we'll end this topic on before we move on to the next one is going to be a kind of an in-depth question. See if we can kind of maybe figure something out of ourselves. But what do you think would be a good way to innovate on the idea of HMDs? Is there anything that you can think of that it would be an innovation for heat management devices? I know it's kind of a daunting task, and we don't want to give away something that we could sell to one of these companies, if you know what I mean. Talk to Cloud or something. No, probably not. But is there? And I'm gonna throw this question out to chat as well, because we have so many people in there talking about some cool stuff. What do you think are some innovative ideas that could help with heat management devices? Adrian, is there anything off the top of your head that you could think of?
I'm just going to use the cop-out and go, a better Provost is the only thing I could really... I'm shocked because everyone knows how well the Provost sells. If I had the infrastructure to produce, I would just have already made the better Provost. And the better Provost would just be like, stop using leaves because I'm pretty sure that's intellectual property, and use a bolt.
There you go. Hey, just use a bolt. There's our innovation tenfold right there. What about you, Zach? Can you think of any innovative ideas to help with HMDs?
So obviously improve the Provost. That's super simple. And I think that's something they can easily do. But what I can say is, we'll take the Phoenix, for example, just fix on some of the shortcomings of the Phoenix itself. And I think you have a perfect heat management device. It's versatile. It fits with a lot of bowls. I guess a lot of people now are gravitating towards, not having ash actually go into your bowl itself, which is something that the Phoenix does achieve. So that's a great feature. If they could just fix the actual lid itself, maybe have something Cloud style with a toggle with vents, or even something like the Stratus, which I've actually been testing out recently. I kind of like the Stratus. There's a feature on there that I think is pretty nifty, where if you lock the lid in a certain position, you can actually pick up the whole heat management device.
That's good.
So I think someone could easily, it'd be the easiest thing in the world, buy all the heat management devices, maybe come to my house because I have all of them, you know, and learn what these guys have done. Have the handle of a MIG. The MIG handle is the best, in my opinion. The threading on there is awesome. It's long enough, and it doesn't overheat. I love that handle. Having the toggling features of the Lotus or the MIG, those are pretty awesome. And having a lid that doesn't get stuck and things like that, I think use the Phoenix bottom and fix the lid, and that's a simple innovation that someone could do to make a perfect heat management device, in my opinion. I think that the Lotus Plus is that far off from perfect. I don't see many things that I would improve with this thing that would make it any different. Some people want to remove the screw holes in there. Now, I think the screw holes, the bolts that go up from the bottom, to have a screwless design like the Lotus 2 are important because they'll increase the capacity. I think those things actually serve a purpose and help dissipate the heat into the whole unit and not just on the bottom plate. So I think we're pretty close to having a perfect heat management device. And I think when people are integrating things like, thermometers and stuff, it's just taking us away from what we really need to be doing, improving some of the very small shortcomings of these pretty awesome heat management devices, and just simply making them better. Not trying to, I guess maybe not say don't debate, but don't do unnecessary things.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think when it comes to me, my biggest innovation would just be simplicity. The reason why the Provost is such a great tool is that it is just so simple to use. And I think it's because it's a thinner, it's thinner than most any other one. You know, some of the nice things about the Provost are the fact that it's thin. And then if you look at the bottom of the Provost, it's actually risen up just very slightly around the edges, right? Like the middle part is just ever so slightly risen. So it keeps that directly off of your foil and stuff like that, which I think is one of the better features of the Provost that maybe we either don't notice all the time or that we didn't think about immediately or something. But I like the fact that it's thinner, and I like the fact that it's raised up a little bit. And I think simplicity is always the best way to go, because at the end of the day, when I'm relaxing and want to just chill out, I just want to use something simple that works every single time. And for me, that has definitely been the Provost. It's not adding steps of any kind, all those kinds of different things. All right. So that was a fun topic and talk and everything like that. If you guys got questions, make sure you drop them. We're going to head over to our next topic of conversation, which is going to be all about YouTube. Yes, Adrian.
Real quick, before we make that transition, I think Wetbeer did a really good job of answering this question. I think Zach might answer it in a similar way. But this is a good question for Zach. Off topic, but what brand of shisha will give you the best bang for your buck in the cloud output range? Right. I get that it's in the pack, but what's your opinion? And you said...
Trifecta.
Captain Wetbeard agrees with you.
I think it's hard to debate trifecta.
Dense packet, fluff packet, don't pack it. It always smokes for me. Like I said, when I come home and I want to smoke and enjoy and I don't feel like testing out some new tobacco that I'm not really sure about at the moment, trifecta is my way to go. The flavor profiles for me are always on point, and it just simply works. It takes heat and it always rips. So trifecta is for me, hands down, by far my favorite tobacco ever.
I mean, it's hard to really debate that in any way at all, I think, personally. I think that Trifecta has such good flavor profiles. They produce a really nice, thick smoke that you can really play around with. And then it's just, I don't know, it's just, it is so well reasonably priced. The only other one that I would throw in there is Alpha Comma, personally, especially if you're a fan of Blonde Leafs and stuff like that. I just think that their flavor profiles are so dynamic. I like that natural flavor that they offer for a lot of their stuff. So to me, it would have to be, I mean, Azor is like right there on the cusp of it. I love Tangiers and all that kind of stuff, but like if you're going dark, I would go Trifecta. If you're going blonde, I would probably go Alpha Comma. Those are two of my absolute favorites personally. What about you, Adrian? Do you have something out of left field that you would suggest?
No, Trifecta is so good. I was going to say Alpha Comma as well. It's a brand that it kind of replaced Alfacker because they're better at flavor profiles and flavor saturation. But yeah, no, Trifecta, like if you really got to boil it down, I'm a Tangiers guy, but I think Desert Island, I would take Trifecta with me because of just flavor saturation and the cloud output. I mean, we all pretend like clouds aren't as important, but who doesn't love clouds?
Yeah.
I love clouds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we love to play around with the clouds, obviously. All right, so let's get into our next topic of the show. It's called YouTube Life. It's going to be all about YouTube. If you guys got questions about content creation, about motivation, about anything at all when it comes to YouTube and hookah and stuff like that, let us know. Drop a question. We'll get it answered as soon as we can. The very first question is, why did you start a YouTube channel? I think this is kind of an interesting question. It's an easy one to answer. It's an easy one with a lot of depth to it a lot of times. Like, I started it for miscellaneous reasons and stuff like that, but I'd love to hear your guys' story. Like, Zach, why did you start Strictly Shisha? What was the original intention, or has it stayed with the original intention, or has it changed a little bit? Like, what is Strictly Shisha to you?
Yeah, we've kind of touched on past episodes as well, but growing up when I wasn't allowed to smoke because I was underage, I was always reading things on the forums. The amount of information that people shared with me, I wanted to kind of give back and share with other people. And that's something that's actually kind of motivated me recently. I find myself on YouTube all day long. I watch a lot of other subject matter on YouTube. Shouldn't do it when I'm driving, but when I'm brushing my teeth, like every little moment of the day, I'm watching something on YouTube and trying to absorb some information. Mm-hmm. And lately, I've kind of thought about something that, like, I know I'm itching to get new content from a particular creator that I like. And when he doesn't put out content in time, I'm just like, man, come on. And one of the reasons why I started my unboxing one, and like I said, I think unboxings are very boring.
They can be.
And maybe I'm doing the unboxing and I don't personally care about what's in the box, and I probably know what's in the box. But I'll watch this particular guy install headlights on his truck that a truck I don't even own, or headlights I'll never buy, but just to watch him. You know, and I find it entertaining. And that's one thing that's really motivating me for this year. It's giving back for my viewers the kind of things that I expect from people that I watch. So I want that little bit of content from him, whether he's doing a tour of his house or his truck, or I watch a lot of gun content. So he's, you know, tricking out a new gun, and I just enjoy watching that. So trying to put out more content for my viewers, because that's what I expect from the content creators that I watch.
I think that's a great way to answer that. It is interesting how I will find myself watching stuff on YouTube that doesn't like immediately interest me, but because it's from a content creator that I like to watch, I'll sit there and I'll watch it anyways, because I enjoy their personality to such an extent that I want to hear what they have to say about some random thing that I may never actually care about. But it's I really enjoy that kind of stuff. What about you, Adrian? What was your reason for starting a YouTube channel?
You know, when I got into it, the reasoning was just I like creating content in general. And I've never really had anything stick out to me as like, what am I going to make YouTube on? I'm not big into like, I don't want to be like a YouTube gamer or anything. And it's just, I like doing stuff with cameras and I like editing video. So I said, man, Hookah's sweet. And I was watching guys like Zach back in the day, back when Hookah Nuka was active over on YouTube before the stuff. And a lot of the old reviewers like Hookah Rev, True Hookah King, I watched your stuff and I was like, this is True Hookah neat. King. Yeah, this is really neat. I was like, I want to do that too. I just want to provide value. And I also noticed that some of the reviewers were dropping off. And I make all of my purchasing decisions when I'm purchasing stuff, maybe not for review, but for my personal stash that's actually kept separate from my stockpile of shit that I review. That costs money, and I don't want to waste money. So that's the big thing.
All of us, we do it to provide information to people. And one thing I've noticed, what's great about all of us, we review different things and we have different opinions on different things, and we don't always agree on the same things. When I was watching YouTube content on Hookah stuff, you have one or two big players and they have their opinion on a product. And I wanted to give my opinion on a product, because a lot of times I'd watch their video, I'd go out and buy the product. And I don't think they were lying necessarily, but their experience did not align with my experience. So I wanted to kind of share my experience with a particular Hookah or a particular heat management device that may be different from theirs. And I found myself in my YouTube career or YouTube filming, whatever, that my opinions do differ from a lot of people's. And that's kind of why I enjoy doing this, because not that I want to go against what everyone says, but it's kind of unique to me when I have an opinion that's different from the 1,000 other people on the forum that's saying, hey, this is an amazing product, check it out. And I'm like, well, I got it and I didn't like it. And let me tell you why I didn't like it, so that maybe your smoking style aligns with mine, mm-hmm. you know? And then mm-hmm. I just saved you $100.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm a big believer in bias when it comes to watching reviewers. I think that it's important to get to know who it is you're watching. I believe in like watching multiple videos, understanding their palates, understanding their habits, understanding like who they are as a person and stuff. My taste buds are so different from Adrian. Like, we will smoke the exact same thing and have a completely different experience. I love candy flavors. I love overly sweet flavors. Adrian, not a big fan of that kind of stuff. I don't usually like a lot of florals and stuff like that, right? So like, if I do give my okay on a floral, you know that it's coming from kind of a different place from somebody who normally really likes florals. Like, I'm experiencing it on a different level, basically. Like the Dubai Apple from Azor, I don't like double apple flavors like at all. I'm not a big fan of that, but I love the Dubai Apple, and I think it's a great one for anybody that does like it, and then also the people that may not like it. I think they could also enjoy it, and you can only really get that understanding of me as a person from my taste buds if you watch multiple videos, because then you can understand better my habits and my palate and all those kinds of things. I had another place that I wanted to go with this. We'll just answer one of the questions. Derek Moses in the chat, he says, I'm going to be putting out some more content. What would you recommend to upgrade as a webcam for live videos and for YouTube videos? I use a Logitech, you know, 1080p or 720p web camera for the live stuff that I do. I have a digital Sony camera that I use when I'm filming my actual reviews. I've used my just my cell phone before in the past as well. Anything that you can use to make videos. I think the more important part of doing that kind of stuff is having a good place to edit the videos personally. So when it comes to purchasing a webcam or a camera for videos, I just think you need a high quality one. Anything will do. Mm-hmm. 720, 1080 and stuff like that. What do you guys think? Is there anything particular that you think is needed for that kind of stuff?
Oh, Zach, you can answer first. I've got kind of a fringe answer to the question.
Yeah, so when it comes to actual cameras, and I get that question a lot, actually, people ask me what I film on. I film on a DSLR camera. It's probably not something I'd recommend. It's bulky now, and now with technology, you can film on most of your smartphones and get really good quality. I mean, I use an iPhone 7, and it films in 4K. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people should obsess over the cameras that they're using. I think more important than a camera is audio. Nothing yes. bothers me more when an audio is trash. And so I'd recommend buying a cheap mic, whether it be a boom mic or a shotgun mic. I use a shotgun mic.
Shotgun, Techstar, yeah. $25.
I'm not using one right now. Just using my laptop because this is live. But like for my videos, I actually happen to spend a little bit of money on mine. But I do use a Rode VideoMic Pro, which is like $250. But buy a cheap, I think Rode even came out with a lower quality model. It's like $59. And it works just fine. So I wouldn't worry about the camera you're shooting on. You shoot on anything you want that's easy for you to use. It's not cumbersome. Maybe get a nice tripod. Even could be a Amazon Basics $20 tripod. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
No one sees it. No one's going to judge you off that. As long as the quality of the content is good and the audio is important, as well as the lighting. And you don't need fancy lighting. Currently, right now, I'm using an IKEA light that's bent a little bit this way, and it happens to have a light on me right now. I have studio lighting. I trip over the cords when I'm filming and I'm like running around, so I don't use that anymore. But lighting is really important. So lighting and audio for me are the most important things if you're gonna do YouTube.
I think audio is super important as well. Just to kind of quickly go off of what you're saying, like I use XLR microphones. I have a pro mixing board that I actually use for the audio. I think audio is quite a bit above video because you can still enjoy video content with what you're listening to, and that stuff will matter so much more. If it's muffled and crappy sounding, like it is not enjoyable by any stretch of the imagination. But what was your fringe answer that you had, Adrian? You said something about that.
To add to what you guys are saying, audio is so important. Like, for instance, what we're doing here is a podcast. So while a lot of you are watching this live, we actually have an audience that watches this after the fact on places like Spotify and Podomatic, places you can absorb audio content, which is why we put so much more emphasis on the conversation than the aesthetic of the show. But if I'm a camera nerd, I'm kind of an editing nerd. When I do my videos, it's almost as much fun for me to record and edit a video as it is for me to, like, a lot of people don't like that.
I love editing, yeah, I agree.
So behind me, this is my actual YouTube setup. It's a DSLR. It's a Canon D5 Mark II. Old camera gifted to me by Kyle Smith of Relics Bowls.
It's a Relics camera.
Ooh, nice camera.
It's a very nice camera. But if you want to do, like, live and webcam content, this is the Canon Vixia 800. It can be routed as a webcam. You can use it for normal content. It shoots at 60 FPS at 1080. And it's got a flip-out viewfinder, which is extremely helpful. So if you want to get nerdy and you want to have a lot of control, like I use a Gaussian blur. So in my videos, the only thing in focus is me. Everything else is blurred out. Most people don't care about that. None of my viewers care. But if you're someone that's in your head all the time like me, you can nerd out if you want to. And I don't know who said it, but for microphones, if you're just all in-house on your computer, just get like a Blue Snowball or a Blue Yeti. Beautiful, all house, just plug-and-play microphones. And
when you get really hot, the quality is quite nice.
Oh, my goodness. It tickled me right there, I swear. I think that those things are very, very important. You need to get something of quality. It doesn't have to break the bank is, I think, the biggest thing. Just get quality. Anything that's going to do well, you don't have to spend that huge amount of money or anything like that. We had another question, actually, from Robert Pope. He asked it only the way that he could. What do y'all use for Movie Maker? I don't use Windows Movie Maker. I use Sony Vegas. That is my main program that I use for almost all of my reviews. I also use a free-to-use video set called a VideoPad. That one I use even more for my mixed videos because I like the different effects that one actually has on standby for it. But when it comes to editing, I really do enjoy the editing stuff of it quite a bit, and I love using Vegas. I've just gotten used to it. Other people that have gotten used to using like Final Cut or like all the different kinds of stuff, even Movie Maker, honestly.
Pro Creative Cloud in-house, baby. It's a good system if you're willing to spend $10 a month just to edit.
Yeah, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with those, honestly. Like, it's kind of it gets down to what you get comfortable using, because I'll tell you what, if you start using one of these video editors, you're going to get stuck using that video editor because you get used to where all the shortcuts are. You get used to how certain things operate and the zoom function. I mean, my God, the one thing that I love about Vegas more than anything else is how easy it is to zoom into the timeline and mix stuff from right there. I just think that's Fantastic.
I don't recommend Premiere Pro to people who aren't savvy at video editing because it's not intuitive and it's clunky. I just learned it, so that's what I'm stuck with, like Matt was saying.
Yeah, you get stuck with it.
Yeah. I tried using it, and it was a lot for me. It was something I had to learn and spend the time on. And I chose that it was more important for my little bit of time to actually put out the content than to learn. But if you have the ability to learn those things, then those give you a lot more options. And, I mean, you can do a lot more fun stuff with your videos than what I can do. I use iMovie on my Mac.
Yeah.
And it's so basic and so rudimentary, but it's just easy for me to use. And like you said, I'm kind of stuck on it now. I have Final Cut, and there's so many more buttons that I got to learn how to press, and I don't feel like learning them right now. That time, I'd rather just put out the content. So sometimes simple works for me, but there are a lot better things than iMovie. But I'd say do with what you got. If you don't want to spend money, use something free. You know, it just matters. Get your voice out there so people can hear it and see your content.
Yeah.
Especially for guys like you, because you're in addition to being a prolific YouTube reviewer, you're a business owner and a busy guy. So you don't have time to sit there and edit for like an hour and a half for every video, like, it's literally what I do.
Oh no, I do it. I just make a lot of mistakes when I'm editing, shooting content, you know?
Yeah.
I'm always jumbling on my words, so no.
And you'll get better at it too. That's the other thing.
Cuts like I do. My videos are like 20 minutes long before I cut them.
But
that's it.
But you definitely get better the more you use it too, is the other thing that I want to say. Like, you get into the routine of like learning things, even if it is like by accident. Like, one of the things that I saw you do, I think it was on your Phoenix review, the very first time you were like, oh, this is the Phoenix, and it like did this cool zoom in effect, and then it like went around. I was like, oh, that's an awesome effect. Why have I never thought to do something like that? Like, those little tiny tricks of the trade that you kind of pick up throughout your doing stuff is just, I don't know, I think that they're really nice, and they're good ways to add like simple flair to different things and stuff like that.
I really want to get a gimbal now and do some like cool B-roll of like around the hook and stuff. So it's so smooth. I try to emulate it now by like kind of holding and stabilization, and I'm not good enough. I know people who can do that, and there's ways you can edit that in, and I try, but I'm not that well versed yet. But I really want a gimbal, make it easy, and just kind of and do some really sick B-roll. But
it'd be cool.
I'm getting there. I'm trying to up my YouTube game like you guys.
No, not at all. So I thought this would be...
When it comes to production and things like that, you guys have me beat by a long shot, you know? Yeah, see, like that? Come on, throw that through my screen. I need that right now.
This is actually also gifted to me by Kyle Smith, the most giving, wonderful man I've ever met. He's like, get this, make your YouTube channel better. I said no three times. He's bigger than me, and he forced me to leave with it. So, thanks, Kyle.
So my next question for you guys is, what keeps you motivated to keep making YouTube content? I mean, I have fallen down the tube of despair before, where it's like, oh man, I don't know what to make a video on. I don't know what to do. And none of my stuff is getting any traction. Like, you can like really easily kind of knock yourself down a couple steps. But what keeps you motivated to get good content and to continuously try to make more content? Adrian, I think we're going to kick this off to you first just to ask you, but what keeps you motivated to keep making stuff?
What helps is enjoying the process for me, because I do more content on YouTube than just my hookah channel. The hookah channel is the most important thing, but I dabble in all sorts of shit. So that's definitely helpful when you enjoy it. It makes it easier to do it when you're in a down period. Another thing is just interacting with people who like seem to have been genuinely affected, whether I save them money or they just enjoyed a piece of content and they say thank you. It's like, wow, I took some time to do a thing. Someone watched it and they liked it. And then I put myself in their shoes. This happens to me every time I watch a piece of content, and it's a good feeling. And it's kind of selfish, but it's a good reason to stay into it.
Yeah, I think anything you can find to find motivation is always a very good thing. You talked briefly about it a little bit before when we started the show, but what are some of the things that keep you motivated, Zach?
Definitely the interaction from people. My interaction on my channel has gotten a lot greater. I've been taking the time to, you know, taking time out of my day to go back and respond to comments and things like that. And people comment back and we have that dialogue on there. And that's really keeping me motivated. Now I want to go on there and reply to comments because people are taking their time out to write comments. And like I said, a lot of it comes full circle when it comes to my experience on YouTube with other content creators. When I comment something, typically it's not just dumb stuff. Typically I need a question answered. And that person takes the time out of their day to respond to my comment, which helped me. And I think I owe that to people who spend their time watching my video. So I know numbers is not something I really care about per se, but seeing a subscriber count go up, it means that people care enough to watch my content.
Continuously.
Seeing viewer counts go up, you know, thumbs up. It really makes a difference. I don't really care for the YouTube algorithm to push me up for the thumbs up, but it just shows me, hey, I actually watched your video and I took that one extra second to thumbs it up. And it really motivates me more than it does. I don't even know what it does on YouTube anymore. I don't know if it makes a difference, especially because we do smoking content. I doubt the algorithm really likes us.
Yeah.
But that thumbs up for me is like, hey, Zach, good job. Like, thumbs up. You did something good today. And I feel appreciated for my time and work that I put into that video. So that's what keeps me motivated.
Speaking of thumbs up, if you guys haven't already, make sure you guys hit that like button. We have the wet beard like goal. We have it set to 40. I didn't know if we were going to hit it today. We're not doing anything special with it, obviously. But if you guys are so inclined and enjoying the content that we are putting out, thank you so much, Zach, for joining us for this, obviously. But smack that like button for Zach. It'll make him smile. Look, he's already smiling. He's already.
Also, real quick, that's the name of the person who's commented. Is that a wine cork on his Lotus? And that's a rigged question. I think that's a...
Well, it is. Okay, so this is a Ottoman Ignis handle. And the silicone on there was super cheap, so it did break off. So I did put a wine cork on the end of it so I can hold the handle. And it actually works really well. Now, the Phoenix HMD comes with a piece of silicone that they tell you right off the bat will melt. So in my opinion, that was the dumbest thing to release something to market that will melt and you need to immediately cut it off. But on my Phoenix lid as well, I do have a wine cork and it makes it so you can easily pick up the lid. It insulates the heat and it works really, really well. So that is a wine cork, yes. And that is how I hold my lid.
I was just going to say it's like the ultimate collaboration between Cloud, the Ignis, and like your house Pinot Grigio. It's the collab no one asked for, but everyone wanted.
I need to up my cork game because I need to get myself one of those. That is a great idea that I had never thought of until I started seeing like people post it and stuff like that. It really is a good idea. I like it a lot.
And use a natural cork. Don't use the synthetic cork. It can melt.
Use
a natural cork and it like just drink a bottle of wine, have fun, and put it on there, and it works really well. And it's cheap. And you don't even need to use just literally the hole that you use to open the wine. Just shove that on there really good.
Yep.
You can obviously use a bracket to tighten it down, but you don't even need it. I don't have one on here. On one of mine, I have a zip tie, but it just works. So who cares? It's never falling off. And I feel more secure with this handle than the ones it comes with.
If you don't know what wine to get, just go to your local vineyard and get the House Merlot.
There you go.
Or watch any of John's content because I swear he's sponsored by Dow because he has a bottle on every video.
Yep. Him and Gary V are getting together.
Do you hear that, Bridget? Zach told us that we need to go get a bottle of wine and have some fun. That is what I heard right now. So that's what we're gonna have to go and do.
More of the story: get drunk and then smoke.
There you go. What kind of content do you like to make? That was my next question. We haven't really covered this too much. I like to make content that I like to watch other people make as well. I think you kind of touched on this ever so slightly when you said this earlier, Zach. But I like a lot of tech videos, and I'm trying to incorporate the things that I like about tech videos into my videos. You know, the B-roll, the talking with the voiceover, stuff like that. Like, I like to make content that interests me, and the stuff that interests me is like the tech videos, obviously hookah videos and stuff too like that. But the stuff that I like to make personally is the stuff that I would love to see somebody else make. We don't see a lot of mixed videos anymore. Like, that's something that just died out before it ever really even got started, I feel. So I'm really trying to push my mixed videos because I like to have fun with them. I like that they're just really quick and easy and simple to follow, and they may have an idea that somebody hadn't thought of before. So the type of content that I like to make is stuff that interests me and then stuff that excites me to film, edit, and all that kind of stuff as well. What about you, Zach? What kind of content, like, and then following into this is like a secondary question, what stuff maybe you don't like to make? I don't like to make Cole videos. I don't like to talk about Coles. I don't like to review Coles. Yeah, I'm just not, and I'm not good at it. I don't feel like I'm a good Cole reviewer, so I'm not a fan of doing that kind of stuff. But what kind of stuff do you enjoy to make content for, and what stuff maybe you're not a big fan of?
Well, to touch on that, so one thing I think is really important when you make YouTube videos, and I swear I see it through when I watch my videos, and maybe sometimes you guys can't see it, but I feel more enthusiastic about making videos that I enjoy making, you know? And when I'm making a video that I don't enjoy or I don't like the product, you just can see through it. There's no passion. There's no love for making that video itself. So for the person, I think it was Derek, so you already know this, Derek, but make videos you actually want to make, not ones you're think you're forced to make. If you, Matt, want to make it on a mix because that's something that interests you, it'll show through on the camera that you actually enjoyed making that video. When I make Cole videos, they're boring and I look bored when I'm making them because they're the worst things to make. So I don't prefer to make Cole videos. I think they're important every now and then when something different in the Cole market may arise. But your average coal video, they're useless, you know? I did one recently on titanium, cocoa earth, and prestige. And I thought that was kind of interesting because those are three very popular coals. And I want to go and get them all done in one video and talk about the pros and cons because it's, you know, it's not that interesting. The videos that I find interesting are on actual products. Heat management devices, hookahs, things that are less subjective and that I may have my hands on and I can tell you the pros and cons that are not my opinion. Flavor reviews, I don't enjoy them as much. They're easier to do for me. Mm-hmm. I can knock that out in 10, 15 minutes and tell you about a flavor and how much I enjoyed it and what it tasted like. But for me, I find, for example, Lotus 2 video was extremely hard for me, but I enjoyed making it because I could tell you about the design and how it affected my session. You know, not just it tastes like blueberries, you know? So yeah. I enjoy making more technical content about products versus flavors, but those are much harder for me. There's a lot more tech information I have to remember in there. There's a lot more cutouts of,
a lot of time.
You know, on bowls, up closes. So those take a lot more time for me,
yeah.
But those are actually what I enjoy more.
Yep.
What about you, Adrian? What kind of content do you enjoy to make? And maybe what stuff are you not a big fan of doing as well?
I do coal reviews. I don't enjoy it. I think the best way to do a coal review is in comparison to what would be considered a utility in a community. So like if you're going to compare a new coal to something everyone's using, that can be useful. But coal videos, like you guys were saying, it can be a little bit convoluted. The information doesn't always come across very well, and everyone uses it. They heat manage differently, so it's kind of weird. I enjoy series videos. I really enjoy diving into product lines and tearing apart an entire line of product and really going into each of their flavors because I find that even the best brands have duds. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy finding them and being like, I don't like this. And I really like it when everyone disagrees with me because then I have to go back and figure out what the fuck I did wrong.
It's definitely good when you're doing content to listen to the feedback. Not all the feedback's going to be great feedback. I learned this a long time ago that like you take everything in one ear and you only keep half of it because sometimes it just may not work out for everybody. And that's just like a reality that you have to kind of get used to and stuff like that. But for the most part, it is nice to create content that other people are agreeing with for a multitude of reasons, obviously, and stuff. Let's go ahead and get into our very final question for this whole topic, and then we can kind of head towards the end of it. My goodness, thank you guys so much for watching and being a part of this. This is the longest episode that we've ever done, obviously. This is kind of the route that we're going for, is going a little bit longer. I hope you guys are enjoying it. If you like the hour and a half session instead of the hour session, let us know. Drop a comment down below, obviously. If you have any other questions that you want to ask for Zach, now is the time to do it so we can get those in as quickly as possible. But Zach, if somebody wants to start a YouTube channel, what advice would you give them?
Do it for the right reasons. And do it, like I said, make videos on products you want to make a video on. You know, if the cool, hot thing is to make it on the Lotus 2, but you have no interest in doing that, then don't do it. You know, if you want to make it on a mix, do it on that. So do it for the right reasons. Don't do it for free products, because I'm telling you, this stuff costs money. It costs me money to make videos every single day. It's not because of free stuff. Painting the free stuff cost me more money because then I have to spend more time on this product that I didn't really want to review. So don't do it for the free stuff. Just do it because you actually love doing it. And interact with people and be appreciative that people are watching you, because there's a lot of other content to watch and they don't have to watch yours.
Yeah, that is the truth. Adrian, what about you? What is some advice that you would give to an upstart of somebody that wants to go out and start a new YouTube channel? Someone's like, you know what, man? Nobody's doing this and I really feel like I need to, but I don't know where to start. Adrian, where do I start if I want to make a YouTube channel?
Okay, so since this is a hookah podcast, I'm going to answer this with the context that you want to start a reviewing or hookah-centric channel.
Good idea.
I'm going to double down on Zach's advice of not doing it for free product. That is the wrong reason to get into this. You will be a trash reviewer. I've seen it happen. Those reviewers last for a month. People call you on your bullshit and you go away. I'm sick and tired of people doing that. I see it. It makes me angry. I get visceral. I used to work with Five Star Hookah. We parted ways for all the right reasons. I had a lot of product from him, Alex, that I didn't like. And I do not want to be a representative of Five Star because they are a good company. So by parting ways, I'm then enabled to say what I want. The trade-off is I pay for my own product. If you're willing to do that and you want to be in the community and you like the attention, like I'm an attention whore. So, you know, I really like all the eyeballs on me. That's really fun for me. So do it for, if you're going to do it for selfish reasons, do it for the right selfish reasons and find a way to actually provide value and give back. And as far as your first video, my best piece of advice is just do it. If you go back on my channel, I still have my first upload live, and it's an unboxing for Hookah Junkie. And I did it with the this angle on my phone. And I didn't use any type of good audio equipment, and it was trash. And I think the entire first 6 months of my videos were all garbage, which is weird because a lot of my biggest hits, given it was on like the Nakla overpack method, which is kind of everyone's into that overseas. But just make Zach said it right. Make the content you want to make. And if you're worth the crap, people will find you. And if you're not, you're probably good at something else, you know, but you got to try it to find out.
And then in addition, one thing I thought about is also don't convey information that you don't know or you haven't personally experienced.
Good one.
You hear a rumor or someone tells you their opinion on something. And I've done this before. Someone asked me my opinion on a product or news on something. And I've said, oh, based off, you know, what I've heard, or I didn't even say that. I said, oh, I don't recommend that product. Don't tell people you don't like things you don't actually know you haven't actually experienced, because that stuff will be on the internet forever. And one day you're going to look back on that. Like, that was really dumb advice. And I led people into buying that product, or I told them this was made from this way and it wasn't made that way. And I led everyone astray. And I started a rumor that was unnecessary, you know, or I didn't recommend a product that I never tried. So, for example, my own personal fault, the Cloud Micro Hookah. Many people I know have tried it, and they said they didn't like it. They said it was a very airy, open draw. A buddy of mine has one who I trust, and he said he didn't like it. It was a trash hookah. I happened to try it, and during that process, people had asked me, would you buy this? Would you buy this? I said, no, I wouldn't buy it. They offered to send me one. I reviewed it, and I actually really enjoyed it for certain reasons. Yep. So I was giving information that I wasn't sure about, and I didn't personally know, and I was stating it as a fact. So in your videos, only state things that you know are for fact or based off your opinion and your experience. Don't say things you read on the forum or on hookah groups that you don't know anything about. Don't talk about dark leaves when one's not a dark leaf and you don't know anything about hookah production or hookah tobacco, you know?
Yeah.
And also don't fall into the marketing jargon from these people who are telling you about all these specially cured tobaccos and their special way of making something when you don't know anything about that stuff. Just don't talk about it because you don't know.
Yeah.
You know? I've done that in the past. I've talked about something that was said to me in a marketing way and I thought it was factual and it was not.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. Like, I think that my pieces of advice is one, just do it. Don't even worry about it. Just make a video. Adrian said that his first video he shot like this and it didn't come out like he would have wanted to, but it kept him keeping to make more and more content. Like, if you have the drive or the want to go out there and make something, just go and make it. One of my biggest ways that I try to live life is don't worry about the why people. Surround yourself with the why not people. You know, when you say like, I'm going to go make a video on YouTube about hookah. If somebody tells you why, don't worry about those people. Worry about the people that are like, why not? Yeah, exactly. Why not? I'm going to go out and do this. It's going to be a fun time. I've made bad videos. I've made many bad videos. And sadly, like I don't want to take those off because I have to stand by them and say, you know what? This is a mistake that I did. I put to film. And today, if you ask me about it, I will say, like, I wished I wouldn't have done it that way. I wish I would have done something a little bit different and stuff. Sometimes go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, sometimes it comes down to me not giving the time and effort that I should have put into something. But you learn from those mistakes and you make better videos. Adrian said it really well, where like people will sniff out the bad reviewers and not watch them again. If you're doing it like Zach said, for the right reasons, if you make a bad video, they're not going to stop watching you. They may disagree with what you said because you did something wrong, but if you're making it for the right reasons, they're going to see that as well. And they're going to be like, you know what? I don't agree with what he just said, but you know what? I'm going to keep on with this person because I like the other stuff that they're doing. And maybe I just don't agree with this one thing. You know, I think those are a good way to kind of navigate that field and stuff is picking the right way to go about it and stuff. What were you going to say, Adrian?
This is the most common thing you hear when people talk about making content. Don't fucking worry about gear at all. My first 6 months on YouTube was my laptop connected to a very, not this webcam, a very bad webcam, and not a microphone, you know? So if you worry about, if you try to get all the good gear, you're not going to know how to use a DSLR when you get it. You're not going to understand how it works. And you're going to wonder why it stops recording after 11 minutes and 30 seconds. Get like something simple or just use your phone. And do it because you enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
It's crappy. It's cheesy. Everyone says it. It's true. Also, Gustav, you really want to micro yourself? I can't gift it because it's my hookah that I keep at my drummer's house because I smoke hookah there. But if you want to try one out, I'll lend it to you for a month or so because I know you're local. Let me know. We'll meet up and you can try it out because I'm not using it currently.
One more point I want to make is just kind of a side note that I've actually noticed. And I do have to leave in just a moment. But especially with people who have a long YouTube career, made a lot of videos. I have this problem with a lot of people who watch really old videos, and then they'll like ask me a question about it, like, hey, you recommended this, and it's like, just gotta remember the timeline when I made that video. I made it like 4 years ago. Preferences change. I've learned since then. So as Matt said, we leave those videos on. We don't take them down. They're still there for informational purposes. But if I recommended a product 5 years ago, I may not recommend it today anymore because things have gotten a lot better. You know,
context changes. Yeah.
Yeah. If you watch my Lotus One video, yeah, I recommended it back in the day because it was a Lotus One. Now the Lotus Plus is out. So I have that problem a lot with people commenting on a video from like 3 years ago, and they're like, "Hey, you recommended this, but you never use it anymore." It's like, because that product is so old now and they've made a lot more improvements to it. So stay up to date with your YouTube content creators, watch all their stuff, learn their preferences, and you know, you'll be a lot better off.
Yeah,
but I actually do have to go, if you guys don't mind.
Can you answer one quick question?
Just because
we got something. Naphael wants to know what the MIG is that you are actually using right now. What MIG is that?
Oh, this is the MIG Mini-Me Premium with the four hoses.
Awesome.
And I do have the Comfort as well with the single hose. This one has the non-traditional chamber. This is the common chamber, but it purges like a dream. It's one of my favorite features, and it's really awesome. It retails for about $485. A little pricey for me. I didn't pay that much, thankfully. Actually, a viewer gave me a good deal on a used one.
Cool.
But it's a phenomenal hookah, very well built.
So let's do our quick ending stuff real quick. Zach, where can people find you on the internet if they're looking for you?
YouTube/StrictlyShisha.
Perfect.
Simple.
What about you, Adrian?
Pipe Dream Hookah for YouTube because I make content there. Like I said, video came out today, new video tonight. Instagram, the_pipedream, same as Twitter. And if you want to find our podcast, which is daily Instagram content starting a week ago, AM Hookah Podcast on Instagram. And Matt, anything from you?
Yeah, you can find me at Matt Dezen on my YouTube channel. You can find me only at Matt Dezen on Twitter and Instagram as well. All sorts of fun stuff. Let's see. Twitch also. Don't forget to check out AM Hookah on Twitch, AM Hookah on Facebook, and then our merch. Don't forget to go and check out our merchandise that we have for sale. You can find it over at Teespring. There should be a link that should be popping up inside of the chat. Thank you guys so much for watching this. We're going to be back on Wednesday to do a Gamecast. We're going to be back on Friday. Maybe on Friday? I don't know. You'll have to stick around and watch. Sub, hit that bell icon and all those other really good things. I can't think of what else to say. I think that's about it. So thank you guys so
Zach,
very much.
Thank you.
Yes, Zach, thank you for
thank
yes.
you guys very much for having me.
We love having
and
you.
And sorry to keep you, man. Have a good time. Yep. Enjoy the move.
Yeah, be a lot of fun. Thank you guys, and thank you everyone for watching. We appreciate your time.
So very much. All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.